This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. And before anything else, I want to thank all those listeners who support what we do, who donated to WIPR's Spring Pledge Drive. Your support makes all the difference in what you hear. Thank you. Now, a radio conversation about the visual. When you think of the attacks of September 11th, what picture comes into your mind? Maybe it's the image of the Twin Towers burning, or the three firefighters raising the flag at Ground Zero after the attacks. Whatever comes to you, visuals tend to play a large role in how we form our idea of what took place during an event. Today we're going to look at the role visuals have played in our understanding of the military and terrorism since September 11th. It's the subject of a book called Beyond the Checkpoint, Visual Practices in America's Global War on Terror, written by Rebecca Edelman. She's an assistant professor of media and communication studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and joins me now in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by someone who curates the images we see. Marianne Golan is director of photography for The Washington Post. She also worked at Time Magazine for more than 20 years and worked in war zones as a young photographer. And she joins us on the line from The Post. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I want to start by asking each of you, what image pops first into your mind when you think of the September 11th attacks? Rebecca?
Well, for me, I first heard about September 11th on the radio. So my very first memories of the attacks are oral rather than visual. And thinking back on it, I'm not sure that there's a single image that stands out from that day. And I think that's partially because of the way it's been represented. Since then, it gets kind of looped and condensed into these very, this sort of stream of images, like the ones you mentioned, these mm-hmm. iconic images of the towers falling or firefighters or George Bush speaking there. But one of the images that comes to mind or that sticks out for me the most are the images that we didn't see until about 3 years after the fact, which was when the security footage from the morning of September 11th for the airports, the airport security footage from the morning of September 11th was released. And this is the kind of low resolution, high angle, sort of mute, scarcely decipherable or mm-hmm. at least partially inscrutable surveillance.
You can only tell what it is because somebody tells you this
exactly.
is what you're seeing now.
Exactly. And so we have this footage of the hijackers clearing security with very minimal obstacles. And it's released with a great deal of fanfare right before the 9/11 report gets published. But one of the things that's interesting to me, beyond the content, some of it is certainly chilling, right? The ease with which the hijackers move through, the fact that they seem untroubled by their passage through security. So there's the content, but what's really interesting to me is the way that those images kind of mark a limit of those visual systems that are designed to keep us safe. As surveillance cameras, they functioned perfectly. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. They surveilled, they recorded, they documented, but that did nothing to keep the country
safe.
Yeah.
Marianne Golan?
Well, for me, I was in New York and actually worked on the magazine. Time magazine put out a magazine in about 36 hours, normally times weekly. Mm-hmm. And we put out a black bordered edition that was about 40 pages with no ads and a black border around the cover. And Time's border, as I'm sure you know, is iconically red. And of course, the image that sticks in my mind, probably because I was working that day, is the cover image where the second plane is actually shattering.
Yeah, that's what I think.
The second tower with the glass. Literally, you can see the glass coming down like it looks like water drops from the sky as the second plane is hitting the mm-hmm. second tower. That image is really pretty seared in my memory.
Marianne, how do you think visuals form our collective memory of
I think I really thank you for asking that question because I feel that I've been a photography editor for 30 years and I feel that all of my memory as a photography editor is in images. And I know that part of that is my professional life, but I also have had many dinner conversations and many conversations like this with professionals in the industry where I can go through event by event and they all remember the same frame.
So you think
for
it does?
For instance, I think it really forms collective memory. I really feel that probably it's changing, very much it's changing, and I think Rebecca's book is pointing that out. But I think that it's an age difference, because if you were born, say, in the last half of the last century, everything was remembered by stills. Now, even if it's not a still image that someone's remembering, it's the video image of the still event that is in the collective memory of people. I actually enjoy it as a photography editor and also as a journalist, to, as almost a parlor game, to play with people, to say, what picture do you remember from this? And then you see how many people actually have the exact same answer. It's really quite extraordinary.
Can you give us some insight into what kind of ground rules you use in deciding whether an image is appropriate to use?
Absolutely. The Washington Post is very conservative in print, more conservative in print than we are on the web, because we feel that the web has a much broader sort of field of images that people are accustomed to seeing. In print, we try to respect the breakfast table test. People sitting at the breakfast table with their four kids, we get a lot of people writing in saying that sometimes our imagery on the front page, on A1, is too violent for them. But we go out of our way to make sure that we're not being overly provocative by showing images that people might deem too graphic for the breakfast table, for lack of a better way to describe it. For instance, we have conversations. The conversations are very, very long sometimes about whether the value of a violent image as a journalistic tool is more important than the violence therein. If that makes sense to you, that we'll have a heavy conversations about whether or not this is A1 worthy, for instance, or we are very much more likely to use a more violent image on the inside pages of the front section than on the front page, for instance.
And do you think our standards here in the U.S. are different than elsewhere in the world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've traveled internationally and taught internationally, and I think that we are far more conservative in the press in the United States than other countries are. I think that they're far more likely to put harder, tougher to look at, tougher to swallow sort of imagery out there than the American media will.
How do you see the role images play evolving? How might we interact with images, say, 20 years from now?
Well, I think that we're in an interesting time, a very exciting time in terms of photography. And my career, as I said, has been almost entirely in still photography, although I'm increasingly involved in multimedia, which says a lot about the changes in the industry. But I think that citizen journalism has really changed the face of things. It used to be that the sort of shocking image or the sort of wow, spot news pictures were taken by professionals. And now it's often just whoever's on the scene with the telephone in their hand. And I think that's really changed the face of spot news. But I don't think it's changed the face of in-depth reporting and visual reporting by professionals. The industry is going through a very, very painful transition and change. And I think it is all due to the way that we consume images and what importance we think images have and how much, for instance, an image is worth. I think all of those questions are super important to the way we move forward. I don't see a world even 10 years from now where there won't be journalists, documentarians, whatever name you want to give them, visual journalists, text journalists, writers, videographers that are giving more depth than a cell phone image to important stories that we need to know about in the world.
Rebecca Edelman, from your perspective, what should we be alert for, and how, in the role that visuals play, how it may change?
I think that one of the things that we need to be aware of is that the relationship between state and citizen and image is going to continue to evolve, I think, in wartime. I think historically we've seen it in pretty binary terms. Either the state and the media are collaborating, they're producing nationalist propaganda, or somehow the media is undermining the militarist ambitions of the state. And historically, we tend to kind of lump media coverage into one of those two categories, with thinking about things like World War II as a place where the state and media tend to be working together, or people often contrast that to Vietnam, at a point where apparently the journalists and the state were at kind of cross purposes. But one of the things I think is going to continue to happen is that relationship between state and media and citizen is going to get a lot more complex, particularly as the role of the visual in fighting war itself changes. When we talk about things like drones, which have everything to do with visibility and invisibility, we're going to hear a lot more, I think, about questions of transparency, which very often is to do with the release of images. So I think that one of the things we need to be alert for is thinking about new ways to understand the relationship between state and media and citizen.
I'm grateful to both of you for talking to us about this. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you a lot.
Rebecca Edelman is an assistant professor of media and communication studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. She's just published Beyond the Checkpoint, Visual Practices in America's Global War on Terror. Marianne Golan is director of photography at The Washington Post. She also worked at Time Magazine for more than 20 years. We have more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning. That other tea party, not the one in the headlines. Stay with us on 88.1.